I'm going to try to say this every time before. If anything's unclear, you have to stop me. Because if you don't get it, somebody else couldn't get it either. It means I'm not being clear, most likely. So feel free to interrupt me. Are we going? I feel like part of the job being from is to field questions from sometimes random, seemingly random questions from different people you meet. So I had a family in Muncie I stayed with for I don't know how many weekends while I was at YU. His name was Krakowski's, if the name means anything to anybody. And I think Dr. Krakowski once told me, he's a psychiatrist in Muncie, so he once told me that he had, I think, a non-Jewish coworker who asked him, yeah, he had a big question for him regarding Yom Kippur, and Dr. Krakowski said he was all trying to get himself psyched up, what's this deep philosophical question going to be? And the question was, why do you wear suits with flip-flops on Yom Kippur? So that's the kind of question you're not really going to anticipate so much, but sometimes a little more predictable. So earlier this week, this woman came up to me. Well, I'm standing next to my sukkah, and this lady comes up to me. So she said, I don't want to be rude. I just want to ask you a question. So it was already obvious what the question was going to be. So she said, I want to know, what do you do in that little hut booth? I forget what noun she used to describe it. She said, do you pray in there? So I said, I mostly eat, study. I said, usually I go to synagogue to pray. And then I offered to give her Mara Makomos. I said, you have a Bible at home? Because she looked like she's Christian. I figured I'll just tell her to look up the Pasuk. So then she got very defensive. I think she thought I was trying to proselytize her, and she got scared off. And she said, I have my own religion. She starts telling me she's Catholic. I said, it's in Leviticus. You know, I don't know if she realized that's part of her Bible or not. So at any rate, the question's not such a crazy question, right? What are you doing there? So let's try to answer that question a little bit today. So if we take a look, the first source here is Vayikra. So the Ikra Parak Kaf Gimel, this is the Marmokom I tried giving her. Ach b'chamisha asr yom l'chodesh ha-shvi'i, ba'as b'chem es tvus ha-aretz, tachogu es chag Hashem, shivas yamim, ba'yom ha-rishon shabason, v'yom ha-shmini shabason. So it's the 15th day to the 7th month. It's the harvest time. So it's 7 days, the 1st and the 8th day, we're not supposed to do malacha, we're not supposed to do work. Lekachtem lachem b'yom harishon pri eitz hadar kapos tamarim ba'anef eitz avos arvei nachol usmachtem lipnei Hashem lokechem shivas yamim. So you take for you on the first day. And this is reference, of course, to the Dalad Minim, the four species. B'chagosem oso chag l'Hashem shivas yamim b'shana chukas olam l'dor seichem b'chodesh hashvi tachogu oso. So then we're told 7 days. Right, that's not a contradiction. First day. In the base of Mikdash, that's why it says in front of Hashem. Right, in front of Hashem, it's all 7 days. Whereas the first day is anywhere you celebrate with the Dalad Minim. Pasuk Mem Beis. Now this gets to our subject. Basukos teishbu shivas yamim kol ezrach b'Yisrael teishbu basukos. So you'll dwell for 7 days in Sukkos. Kol ezrach b'Yisrael. Literally, I suppose every citizen or every native born will dwell in Sukkos. Why? L'man yidudor seichem ki basukos hoshabti es b'nei Yisrael b'hotzi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim ani Hashem Elokeichem. In order so that your generations should know that I caused b'nei Yisrael, hoshabti is causative. Right? Yeshvu has to do with what somebody does on their own. Hoshabti is to cause somebody else. I caused the b'nei Yisrael in my taking them out of the land of Egypt. I am God, your God. So the obvious question here, look at the Mefarshim, so the part of the issue is going to be why Hoshabti? Why is it a causative language that I caused the Jews to live in Sukkos? If we take a look at Rashi, the very next source, what does Rashi say? Ki basukos Hoshabti, anane kavod, clouds of glory. So what's an obvious trigger for that understanding? Why would you say anane kavod as opposed to what the word seemingly means, Sukkos? So, super. I think the Mizrach. What's that?
Because he took it from the source.
Okay, so Rashi doesn't make things up, and if Rashi's speculating, he tells you who he is. So, if you take a look, thank you, at the next source, Masechet Sukkah Daf Yud Aleph, we have a Machlokas Tanaim. There's an argument from the rabbis in the Mishnah, the Sanya, we learn in Abraisa. Ki basukos hoshabti es b'nei Yisrael. I caused the Jews to dwell in the Sukkos. Anani kavod hayu divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer, who's known as Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Eliezer the Great, says, These are referring to Anani Kavo. These are the clouds of glory. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Sukkos Mamash Asulahem. Rabbi Akiva says, no, Sukkos means Sukkos, doesn't mean anything else. So Rashi's choosing which opinion. Who's he following? Or whom is he following?
Rabbi Elazar.
He's following Rabbi Elazar.
Rabbi Elazar.
So if we take a look, I wasn't correcting you, I was repeating. So if we take a look at the Shulchan Aruch follows in the footsteps of the Torah. B'sukos teishvu shivas yamim v'gomer, ki b'sukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, heim anani kavod, sheikifam behem, lavaya kem sharam v'shamish. Right, so that they shouldn't be struck by the heat, etc. So the Shulchan Aruch, like Rashi and the Pasuk, is explaining it means anani kavod. Good question is, what nafkamina is there? What does the Shulchan Aruch have to tell me what the nature of the sukkos were, right? So if you take a look at some of the mafarshim, they'll tell you that it has to do with kavana. What's your kavana? What's your intent supposed to be while you're in the sukkah? What are you supposed to be? Obviously, the first shlab, the first level of any mitzvah, the kavana is to be to have in mind you're doing the mitzvah. But on top of that, when it comes to the sukkah, there's supposed to be an additional kavana that the schach should perhaps trigger some kind of association either with the Anani Kavod, with the Sukkos Mamish of Rabbi Akiva. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin, like Rabbi Eliezer, that it means the Anani Kavod. Thank you. Right. I think the Magen Avraham. What David said. I think the Magen Avraham says that when you have a phrase like that, Leman Yidu, so that creates an obligation of kavana that wouldn't normally exist. And obviously, we have an idea. You're supposed to have kavana when you do mitzvahs anyway. When you whatever the mitzvah is, when you do it, ideally you're supposed to have kavana. But with certain mitzvahs where the psukim indicate a more, let's say, a clearer reason for why you're doing it, so there's a greater obligation to have proper kavana, additional level of kavana. That might be a proper way to frame it. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who lived in the 1800s, he wrote a sefer called Aruch Lanier. It's the best known sefer he wrote. He also wrote Shailos Tshuvos Binyan Sion, and he also wrote Bikurei Yaakov. So the Bikurei Yaakov, he's very troubled by the Torah and the Shulchan. The Torah I didn't cite here because the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch basically say the same thing. He's very, very troubled by the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. So he has two questions. So in the Yaakov, he asks, number one, Rabbi Elazar Shemuti Hu. I'll explain in a second what that means. Secondly, there's a klal in halacha that we've passed Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar Shemuti Hu, and I'll explain in a second what that means. And the other is, so one problem is that Rabbi Elazar, we shouldn't pass him like him because he's a Shemuti. He doesn't explain what that means, so I'll get to that in a second. And the other problem is, who's Rabbi Elazar arguing with? Rabbi Akiva. And the general principle of halacha is Rabbi Akiva beats out any other single individual. So what's going on here? So in terms of Shemuti Hu, there's two ways to understand what the phrase means. One is that he was in Cherem, he was excommunicated, which he was. The other possible meaning is that he's from Beis Shammai. So when we say that we shouldn't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, it means either because he's from Beis Shammai or because he's in Cherem. In terms of the claw that Rabbi Akiva is always beats everybody else out, that's self-explanatory what that means. Additionally, in the Bikurei Yaakov, he points out that he's bothered by Rashi and the Pasuk. Rashi, I wouldn't call this paskening. I saw somebody in a sefer describe it that the Rashi's saying what the halacha is. I'm not sure if to say that. I mean, I think Rashi's just trying to say pshat in the Pasuk. But at any rate, you know, he's bothered by the fact that Rashi explains the Pasuk in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer also. As if, again, we have these two problems going like Rabbi Eliezer, so Rashi should explain like Rabbi Akiva. And he quotes from the Mizrahi, where he's not satisfied with the answer the Mizrahi gave. So he has two possible approaches. The second one is extremely easy. We'll look at the first one first. So what I did here is I sort of laid out the Gemara a little differently than it appears in the Gemara, and I cut out parts that I thought were less relevant to what we're doing. So let's start with the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, and it's the very first Mishnah in Sukkah, says, Sukkah she gavola mala miyasir mama, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. So sukkah which is within 20 amos is Pasula, it's invalid. Rabbi Yehuda Machsher, Rabbi Yehuda allows for it. Some understand Rabbi Yehuda to, I think, even want it to be that way, lechatchila, but we're not going to worry about that right now. We're worried about Tana Kama. Tana Kama says that a sukkah over 20 amos is no good. Why should that be? So the Gemara, the Mishnah proceeds with three other problems that could occur with your sukkah. We're not getting into that. And the Gemara starts off with a discussion where it compares the language of our Mishnah to that of the Mishnah in Erevin. We're skipping over that as well. And now we're going to jump into, there's a three-way Machlokas Amoraim. There's a debate among the rabbis of the Gemara as to why should a sukkah over 20 amos be invalid. Amar Rabba to Amar Cross. So Rabba points to a Klaman Yidor say, Shlau Pesuk Yis Ben Yisrael. Adesrim Adam Amar Adam Yodea Shudar Besukkah. So the Pesuk says, your generation should know, cause Ben Yisrael to dwell in Sukkahs. Ad Esrim Amar Adam Yodea Shudar Besukkah. Up until 20 Amos, if the Schach is within 20 Amos, somebody knows he's in a Sukkah. Lamala me Esrim Amar, but if the Schach would be over 20 Amos, Ein Adam Yodea Shudar Besukkah. He's not aware that he's in a Sukkah. Why? Literally because the eye doesn't dominate. So I think the simple understanding of Rabbah is like this, that naturally speaking, when you look at something, you have your peripheral vision, right? I'll see things to my sides, above and below. And within 20 amos, I'm likely to be aware of the schach. But if it's higher than that, I'm not going to notice it. It doesn't mean if I don't look up, I won't see it, right? Obviously, most people will. But the point being that, naturally speaking, you won't be aware of it. So how does Rabbah understand the phrase L'man Yedu? What's the idea? It's the idea that you're in a sukkah. That's the idea. That's what Rabbah's saying. L'man Yedu Dor Seichem.
Living in Chicago, the schach be 40 amos high, we're still going to notice that you're in a sukkah because it's going to be cold. As opposed to being inside. So it's not going to be... So you don't need it to be that low. You're still going to know that you're in there because... of the weather.
Sure. I think the answer to that is the following, that the Chayyarim says this in the beginning of Hilchos Sukkah, and I think Rashi may even say this at the beginning of the Masechta, that whenever we use the word Sukkah, it really means Schach. Sukkah means Schach. It's, Sukkah doesn't really refer to the walls or even the experience of the biting cold that you may have while you're in the sukkah. It means the schach. It's a simple grammatical point. Sukkah has a, without getting too detailed, sukkah has a digation kaf. She says there's a dot in the kaf. So kaf is after a vowel. So it should be sukkah. So why is it sukkah? Because the word is really set. Sukkah, schach, it's schach. That's the word sukkah means schach. That's what it means. B'shem Omro, I heard that from Ben Skydell, who explained it over from Professor Tawila many, many years ago to me. At any rate, I think that's the answer. That the idea by schach or sukkah is going to mean schach, and schach, so the schach therefore has to be within 20 amos. Otherwise, you won't notice it. You're right. You'll be aware that you're outside. You may even be aware that there's walls that are not normally in your backyard. But it boils down to the schach. I think that's the answer. And we'll see that the second opinion focuses exclusively on schach. So then we get to opinion number two, Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira Amar, Mihacha. He says, no, this is why a sukkah where the schach is over 20 amos from the ground is no good. Or I shouldn't, probably the proper way to say it is over 20 amos from your ground level, right? If you build your sukkah on a roof of the building, obviously, that could be over 20 amos from the ground. So Mihacha, from a pasuk in Yeshaya. That the sukkah should be for shade of the day from, let's say, the heat. Ad esrim ama adam yoshev etzel sukkah. Up until 20 amos, somebody dwells in the shade of the sukkah. Lama'ala mi esrim ama. What if your sukkah is more than 20 amos tall? Ain adam yoshev etzel sukkah. You're not in the shade of the sukkah. Ela betzel defanos. Rather, you're in the shade of the walls. So I think it's very clear here. And a friend of mine recently pointed out to me from Rav Zevin also this inference that clearly sukkah has to mean schach because it's being contrasted with the defanos for the walls, right? So if your sukkah is, say, 30 amos high, which is exceedingly tall, but let's say you had really built such a high sukkah. So if you would have such a high sukkah, so the shade you would be in would be coming from the walls. The schach already, it's without diagramming it, it's hard to see if you don't visualize it naturally, but I'll use my arms because I'm getting all literally on the sun. right? The schach shade is going to be all the way over here, and meanwhile you're here getting shaded, sheltered by the walls, and that's not what it's for. You're supposed to get shaded by the schach. Amar le Abai, Elamayata, Ha'osis Sukasu, Ba'ashtros Karnaim, Hachanami Dula Havi Sukkah. So Abai's attack on Rabbi Zera is based on what you said. If you build your sukkah in a valley, that should also not be good because you're being shaded by what? By mountains, but not by the schach. So Amar le, so Rabbi Zera responds simply to Abai, Hasam Dal Ashtros Karnaim, he could sell sukkah. Hacha Dal Tafanos, they could sell sukkah. There, if you would take the mountains away, you'd still be in the shade of the schach. But here, if you take the walls away, you wouldn't be. I think what it means simply is like this, that in the case of Ashtros Karnaim, there's nothing wrong with the sukkah itself. It's just the environment is blocking off the sun such that you don't get shaded by the schach. But when it comes to a 30, 40 amah high sukkah, it's inherently, the problem's in the sukkah inherently, that you're not getting shaded by the schach. Now we'll jump to Rava, right? And then we've seen all three opinions. Now, Rava Amar Mehacha, V'sukos Teishu Shivas Yamim. You're supposed to be in the sukkahs for 7 days. Amar Tara, Kol Shivas Hayamim, Se Midiras Keva, V'shev Midiras Arai. That all 7 days, you go out from your permanent dwelling and you live in a temporary dwelling. Ad Esrim Ama Adam Osa Diras Adiras Arai, Lamal Shema Ein Adam Osa Diras Adiras Arai, Ela Diras Keva. If it's within 20 amos, people will build something in a temporary fashion, but if you build it 40, 50 amos high, that's how you build something in a permanent fashion. Amale Abai, Abai responds, Elameata, Asa Mechitza, Shel Barzel, Pesichal Gaban, Hachanami Dulavi Sukha. Based on what you're saying, that it's whether or not it's built in a temporary or a permanent fashion, if you would make walls out of iron, that should also be no good with the schach on top. Sometimes you'll see, I think just east of California, somebody has this set up. You'll see a house where the roof is sort of like on hinges, I guess. Probably these days it's more high tech than that. But the roof can be moved aside, and then they can stick the schach on top. So those are totally permanent walls. Those walls don't go anywhere, right? That's all year round, those walls.
What's the argument
here? Abai. So Abai is saying, if it's an issue of whether you built it in a temporary or permanent way, so if the walls are permanent, that should also be no good. Let's say you have a 15 amah high sukkah, height-wise it's not a problem, and the walls are made out of permanent materials,
permanent anyway.
That should be no good. So his response, Amar le hachi ka aminalach. This is what I mean to say. Ad esrim amah da adam osa diras adiras arai, kivad le diras kevin aminafik. Up until 20 amos, then let's put it like this. The normal way, if somebody builds something within that, it would be normal or not abnormal, at least, to make something in a temporary way. So if you make it in a permanent way, that's also okay. But if it's beyond 20 amos, nobody builds a temporary structure that's more than 20 amos tall. It would just come crashing down. So if you somehow managed to do so, you wouldn't be yotze, because that's not normal. In other words, what Rav is saying is that it doesn't go by whether you made the walls out of iron or you made them out of a stack of cards. The issue is whether or not it's within the normal limits of temporary versus permanent dwellings. Over 20 amos, it's normal to make it permanent. You made it non-permanent, it's still no good. Within 20 amos, it's normal to make it temporary. You made it permanent, that's still okay. So now we get to the Arach Lanair, the Bikur Yaakov's proof. Or I shouldn't say proof, but attempt to answer his question. Number one, we see here, I broke it down. And we're only gonna focus on number one here. But what I broke down for you is the Gemara addresses why all the Amoraim disagree with any other Amora. In other words, we had three Amoraim in the Sugya. Obviously, each one has two others disagreeing with him. So step number one is, why does everybody argue with Rava? Step number two is, why do the other two argue with Rizera? And step number three is, why do the other two argue with Rava? So we're just gonna focus on number one. Kulu Karaba Lo Amri, how you deal with Dorosi? Why do they disagree with Rava? You can turn the page now. How you deal with Dorosi? Meaning, the pasuk said Laman Yidu Doroseichem. It didn't say Laman Yata Sha Ata Basuka, Tia Basuka, right? It didn't say that you should be where you'll be in a sukkah. It said so your generations will know. It's got nothing to do with some kind of immediate knowledge that I'm in a sukkah, that I have schach over me. That's not what the pasuk's talking about. Is that clear? What was Rava's proof again? Rava claimed The reason why the sukkah can't be over 20 amos is because if it's, say, 25 amos high, you won't notice the schach, and you won't know you're in a sukkah. And the pasuk says, Laman yidu dor seichem. So Rava and Rabbi Zera would simply respond back, either they did or they would, respond back, that's not what the pasuk's talking about. The pasuk says, Laman yidu dor seichem. It has to do with passing knowledge from one generation to the next, that later generations should be aware what happened earlier. It's got nothing to do with knowledge that I'm under schach. If you take like a Rashi there, it seems like a good shot point, a pretty straightforward argument. So Rashi, Kulu Hanach Amorai, so Rashi points out that when all of them just means the other two Amorai in the discussion, Karabalo Amri, the Aleph Milamayn Yedu, Ha'ula Biyadiyah Yeshiva Sukkah Ka'amar, it's got nothing to do with your being aware you're in a Sukkah, Ela Biyadiyos Doros Habayin, Hekef Suksanani Kavod Hana Asila Avos. Rather, it has to do with the knowledge of generations, when it comes to the Jews having been encompassed by the Anani Akava, the clouds of glory, or our ancestors. So the Bikur Yaakov, Rabbi Ettlinger, is bothered by this Rashi. Of course, Rabbi would agree. What does the pasuk say? Laman yidu dor seichem. Of course, he would agree that it has to do with doros habayin. Right? It's absurd. It's absurd to say otherwise because it's what the pasuk says. Right? Rabbi's not coming to argue with the pasuk. So what exactly is the point of contention here? So the Bikur Yaakov, this is a little bit subtle, but we'll go slowly, I think everybody can get it. So the Bikur Yaakov claims the following, that why does Rashi focus on the Anani Kavod here? Because the other Amorai were saying to Rabbah, it's got nothing to do with your knowledge of being under Schach, rather, it has to do with future generations knowing that the ancestors were under the Anani, or within the Anani Kavod. What's Rava hold? Because Rava has to agree with Laman Yidu. That's a pasuk. So what could Rava be arguing?
Generations should know that they're under the knowledge of what the experience of the
sukkah
is versus the.
So the difficulty with that, this is Rabbi Ettlinger's point. If you look at the pasuk, what does it say? Laman yidu dor seichem kiva sukkos hoshabti es b'nei Yisrael botzi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim. It's just so blatant that it's tied into a historical memory that it's hard to understand how Rabbi could possibly disagree with that. That makes sense? So what he gets from Rashi is the following idea, that he thinks Rabbi really argues with Rava and Rabbi Zera when it comes to the first machlokas we saw, Rabbi Akiva versus Rabbi Eliezer. I'll explain how that works in a second. According to the Bikur Yaakov, Rabbi holds Sukkos Mamish, like Rabbi Akiva, and Rava and Rabbi Zera hold Anani Akavod like Rabbi Eliezer. And that's why, if you look at Rashi again, keep that in mind, let's look at Rashi again. Ha'olah b'yadid yeshiva sukkah ka'amar, ela b'diyos doros habayin hekev sukkos Anani Kavod and asa la'avos. The only possible point of argument here, it can't have to do with subsequent generations, because that's the pasuk. The only possible thing in here that Rava could argue with is Hekiv Sukkos Anani Kavod and Asa La'avos. Make sense? The only thing Rabbi could argue with here in this Rashi is the Anani Kavod part. Because that's a Mechalkos Tanayim. Rabbi's allowed to take a position on that. Now, let's just flesh this out a little bit more. You can turn the page over. We'll look back at the Pasuk again. I just want to explain. So this is what the Bikur Yaakov does. Looking at the pasuk, he explains like this: "Laman yidu dor seichem ki misukos hashabti es b'nei Yisrael botzi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim, ani Hashem Elokecha." What word in there is difficult if you're a Rabbi Akiva person? If you hold sukkos mamish, what word did we point out earlier creates a problem?
Hoshabti.
Exactly, hoshabti. Hoshabti is very awkward. If you hold an Anani Kavod, it's easy. Right, for Rabbi Zera, there's no question. What's Hoshabti mean? Anani Kavod. HaKadosh Baruch Hu surrounded us with Anani Kavod. This is Hoshabti. But for Rabbi Akiva and Rabba, yeah, so what's the Hoshabti? Excellent, right? Exactly. So the way that the Bikur Yaakov says is like this. For Rabba, the Hoshabti is very awkward. So what does Hoshabti mean? It means Shmi. Meaning you're doing it for Hashem. You're doing it because it's a mitzvah. So then Laman Yedu, that kind of sets it up. Laman Yedu means something a little bit more than. He understands Rabbah to understand the pasuk to be, like Hoshabti means for Hashem, meaning for the mitzvah. So he understands that to kind of create a rem as an illusion in the Yehidu. In order they should know, how do you do it for my sake? How do you do it for Hashem? With a Yediyah, you have to be aware. Then you're doing it Lishma. If you're aware you're under the Schach, that creates a Lishma, right? In other words, then you're doing it because of Hashem, because of the... Right, if it's for Anani Kavod, the whole thing's just easy. There's no difficulties. Hoshavti, I made them dwell in the Anani Kavod. Laman Yedu, then that just means just that, for the future generations. It means nothing more. But for Rabbi Akiva, well, Hoshavti's a little bit awkward. What's it mean? Do it for my benefit. Do it for Hashem. So how do you do that? With a Yedid, with an awareness, with a knowledge. That's how the Bikur Yaakov teaches it up based on Rashi. Says a little bit more than that, I believe, but I think that's the basic nakuda, the basic point. Then he says a much easier approach. He points it out from the Rokeach, but in the Arachlan area, he also points it out from the Sifra. The Sifra, Ars Kahanim, is Medrash on Sefer Vayikra, and the Medrash there says the following: L'man yidu dor seichem b'sukos hoshav, hoshavto. I think that's probably a typo on my part. Sorry, hoshav. No, I got that off of a... I cut and pasted that from... Okay, I think you're right anyway. I think that's probably type 1 on their part, if not mine. Hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, b'hotzi osam eretz Mitzrayim. Rabbi Eliezer omer sukos mamish hayu, Rabbi Akiva omer besukos anani kavod hayu. So, what just happened? What did the Sifra do differently than an hour Gemara? Just compare them and you'll see the...
Switch it around.
Yeah. The Manda Amrs are different.
Really?
Well, that meaning each one says something different. It's the same people, but saying different things. Right. In other words, here, instead of Rabbi Akiva saying Sukkos Mamash, it's Rabbi Eliezer. And instead of Rabbi Eliezer saying Anani Kavod, it's Rabbi Akiva. Okay? So, yeah, it seems a little bit weird at first glance. Maybe at second glance and third glance, it'll still seem weird. I'm not sure. I don't have an answer for that. At any rate, we now have two approaches that Bikur Yaakov offers for how to get around his difficulty. His difficulty, again, was twofold. Number one, Rabbi Eliezer Shemutihu. Rabbi Eliezer was either in Cherem or from Beis Shammai. Either way, we shouldn't paskin like him. Doesn't mean he's a bad Jew. Just means we don't paskin like him. Right? He was a very good Jew. And secondly, we have a klal. Rabbi Akiva always beats out any other single Tana. So Rabbi Akiva should have won here. So what's going on? So the second answer, the easier one, is that Rabbi Akiva did win. It's just that the Girsa is the Sifra, not the Gemara. That's a very easy answer. Rabbi Akiva says, Anane Kavod, in the Sifra, in the Shulchan Aruch, apparently, according to this, would have that Girsa, that Rabbi Akiva said, Anane Kavod. That's one approach. The more complex approach, maybe the more creative approach, I guess, is to say like this, that the basically on the way we learned in the Gemara and Rashi, Rabba holds like Rabbi Akiva, that from as we have the Girsa in our Gemara, holds Anani Kavo, holds Sukkos Mamish. Rava and Rabbi Zira hold like Rabbi Eliezer Anani Kavod. Fine. Why does Rashi in the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch feel compelled to go like Rava and Rabbi Zira, not like Rava? Very simply, without getting into the Shakla Vitaria, without getting into all the whole back and forth, the Gemara makes it clear that if you hold like Rava, you have an interesting kula. If I hold the reason why the sukkah can't be over 20 amos is because I won't see the schach, but if the walls go all the way up to the schach, he will. Why? Because a person's eye naturally kind of like moves along planes. So if you see the wall, and the wall goes all the way to the schach, it could be 30 amos high, I'll eventually notice the schach. And see, that's good enough. But we don't paskin that. Like, if you look at all the poskim, you don't find that nafka. I mean, you don't find any kula that if the walls go up to the schach, now the sukkah could be 100 amos high. You don't find it. 20 amos is the maximum. So the Bikur Yaakov says, we see what? We don't paskin like Rava, which means we don't paskin Sukkos Mamish. Rather, we paskin like Rava or Rabbi Zera. I think we paskin like Rava, which means Anani Kavod, and that would be another way of answering the question. So before we go any further, I'll tell you what really bothered me about the Bikur Yaakov. To me, this is like a way to... This was good for my Amunas Chachamim, I suppose. I was very bothered by this Bikur Yaakov because it seemed to me his questions don't even get off the ground. The issue of Rabbi Eliezer being Shemuti and Rabbi Akiva being always beating out his contemporaries, to me, were not relevant here because we have another Yisod, which is that Rabbi Akiva was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, and in general, at least if they're arguing in the same lifetime, I think I saw this distinction in the Nimukiosek, maybe. If they're arguing the same lifetime, so the Rebbe wins. Rebbe Eliezer is the Rebbe. How do I know? So just take a look at Hakdamas or Rambam to the Mishnah Torah. Chamisha Talmidim Hayu Lo L'Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai had five Talmidim. The Heim Gedolei HaChachamim Shekiblu Mimenu. They are the five of the greatest of the sages that received the tradition from him, the Torah Shemal Peh, Elohim. And these are they: Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Rabbi Shimon Ben Asanel, Rabbi Elazar Ben Arach, Rabbi Akiva Ben Yosef, Kibel, may Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Yosef Aviv, Ger Tzedekiah. So Rabbi Akiva Ben Yosef, the son of a Ger Tzedek, received the tradition from Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. So who's the Rebbe and who's the Talmud? Rabbi Eliezer is the Rebbe, so I don't care. Right, first of all, if he's from Beit Shammai, what does that say about Rabbi Akiva? Because that's his Talmud. And the whole idea that Rabbi Akiva beats out anybody, but this is his rabbi. So how does that question even get off the ground? And then I'm just going to mention this because there's a gzera sheva between Sukkot and Pesach, and I particularly like this vort. So this is when I first found out that Rabbi Akiva was a Talmud. Rabbi Eliezer was in this vort. If you look in the first look in the Haggadah. Masab Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shahayu, I should say Mesubin Bivnei Brak, Chaim Masab, Mitzis Mitzrayim, Koloso Lara. So all of you have seen this before. We have this narrative, this incident with these big Tanaim, these big rabbis from the Mishnaic period, and they're reclining in Bnei Brak, and they're discussing Mitzis Mitzrayim all night long. So I think this is a good case where you see that the question, at least this is what I believe, the question doesn't have to be so strong that you could have a really good answer for a not-so-strong question. Sometimes the question is too strong and the answer doesn't make you happy. This is a case where the question didn't really bother me, but the answer is so good that I like to say it over a lot. So the question that bothered Rabbi Yaakov Meir Padua, all I know about him is he lived in Italy in the 1800s. So he's bothered. Why does he have to say in Bnei Brak? That's what bothered him. Why did he be told about the location where they had the Seder? So again, I don't know if that's such a strong question, but the answer he gives is immensely clever. So he says like this. We all know, he doesn't give a source. He just says, it's a known matter that Rabbi Eliezer was the rabbi of Rabbi Akiva. And that a Talmud doesn't have to do Haseba in front of his teacher. So if I'm with my rabbi, I don't have to do Haseba at the Seder. And then Rabbi Yaakov Meir says further, not only that, if you look at the Rambam, it sounds like it's Isur B'davar. It sounds like you're actually not allowed to. So if you'd be at the Seder with your Rebbe Muvak, with your main rabbi, you're not supposed to do Haseba, according to that. So how's Rabbi Akiva doing Haseba in front of Rabbi Eliezer? It should be Asur. So you go through like a whole, I won't go through all the steps. If you ever look in a Mingle Eder Haggadah, on that section you'll find a parish. His maskah is the following. If you look at Gemara Hedrin, so Rabbi Akiva's Mokom B'nei Brak, he's Mar Da Asur B'nei Brak. And the halacha is that you always have to give kavod to his makom. So since they were in Rabbi Akiva's territory, they have to give him kavod, and you are allowed to give rishus seba. So that's how Rabbi Akiva, we know he did the seba also. That's how he says. What emerges from, so again, I like that vort, so I said it over. But one thing that's interesting there is he says it. He says it in the language of something like it's yadua. It's known that he's a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. So how do these questions get off the ground, right? Rabbi Akiva beats his friend. This isn't his friend. It's his rabbi. And if he's from Beit Shammai, he isn't Rabbi Akiva. So in addition to Bikur Yaakov, there's something I think called Tosefes Yaakov, in the back of Bikur Yaakov. That's where Rabbi Anlinger, I think when he wrote the Sefer, if I'm not mistaken, he was very young. I think he was in his 20s. And I think a bunch of Gedolim corresponded with him. So they would ask questions on what he wrote. They'd make comments. So I wasn't familiar with the person who attacked him, but I was pleased to see he had the same question I had. He didn't give him a chorus, but I think what he said basically is, look, Rabbi Akiva's a Talmud. What kind of question is this? So this is where you see Rabbi Etlinger's Gaonis. I'm not bringing the sources. The list is way too long. He has sources, 15, 20, I don't know how many makoros he has, where you see this Machlokas Rabbi Akiva really is in the Mishnah. Look at the Rambam. He paskins Rabbi Akiva. It's consistent. He constantly paskins Rabbi Akiva over Rabbi Eliezer. And the Kesef Mishnah in one place says Rabbi Akiva always beats out Rabbi Eliezer. So I don't know. I don't really understand why that is, right? But apparently my questions were diffused very readily. Right, for whatever reason, Rabbi Etlinger didn't feel the need to address it in the original piece, but when this Av Bastin of some community wrote him a letter saying, I don't understand your vort. So Rabbi Etlinger said, look at these makoros, and he gave him like a laundry list. It's a huge list where it's clear that Rabbi Akiva always beats out everybody, one-on-one, even Rabbi Eliezer, for whatever reason. And then in terms of the Shemuti, he brings down makoros for that from Tosfos and maybe others as well. So what we have is Bikur Yaakov's basic question again was, and apparently the question stands in spite of what I thought was a good question. I guess it was a good question. I've based and asked it, but it still stands, right? Which is why, assuming we don't go with this girsa of the Sifra, why should we pask and Rebbe Eliezer over Rebbe Akiva, right? So one answer is the girsa from the Sifra. The other answer is, well, we see the Amoraim doing it. What I want to take a look at now is three very short excerpts. They're very straightforward from Poskim. If you look in the Mishnah Brura, we see he says, "V'kasu achronim shechavin b'shiva sa." Somebody should have in mind when he sits in the sukkah, "Shitzivanu kadosh baruch hu l'shiva sukkah." That Hashem commanded us to sit in the sukkah. Zeichel etzias mitzrayim. It's remembering leaving Egypt. "V'gam zeichel lanan ekava." That sounds like Rabbi Eliezer, obviously. "Sheikifan az aleinu lahagin aleinu min hasherem v'hashemesh." Right, that Hashem surrounded us with these clouds of glory to protect us. The kol zeh letzeisidei hamitzvah kitikuna. All of this is to fulfill the mitzvah in its most perfect way. Hadyeved, what if after the fact you didn't? Yotzi kol shekivin letzeis levad. As long as, he quotes the Prima Gunim, as long as you had intent to do the mitzvah, so you got the mitzvah under your belt. If you didn't get it in the most perfect way, for that you should have in mind something beyond doing the mitzvah, but you got the basic mitzvah. So what two things does the Mishnah Berurah tell us to have in mind, ideally, when we're in the sukkah?
Yetzias
Mitzrayim, and what else?
Ananiyakava.
Two things, okay? Now, at one point, I wanted to fetch out that the Mishnah Berurah was really saying, like both Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, because of the following reason. If you look at the Taz on the Shulchan Aruch, see, he explains... And the truth is, there's an article from a Rebbe Heber who lives in Toronto, and a sefer put out by the Dirshu Kollel. So Rebbe Heber there has a nice synopsis, a lot of the different shitas. The way he says over the Taz, like in a short form, is the Machlokas Rebbe Akiva and Rebbe Eliezer, according to the Taz, is whether or not one has to have in mind all the nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim, or just one nisim in particular. How does that work? If you look at the Ananiya Kovat, that's obviously Nes Miyuchad, that's particularly Nes. But Yetzias Mitzrayim would just mean, if you say Sukkos Mamish, what does that mean? We're not commemorating any particular Nes. It's all the Nesim affiliated with Yetzias Mitzrayim. So if you would say like that, you might try to fetch out that the Mishnah Berurah actually is saying like both opinions. But I don't think so, because Kasva Achronim, so if you look at the way most Achronim say, I think, you know, the Magen Avraham says, you're supposed to think, I think what the Magen Avraham says in the Shulchan Aruch Rav, I saw quoted by Rabbi Heber, is also saying like this, you're supposed to have in mind Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? It sounds like he's just trying to fulfill more shitas in Achronim. It doesn't sound to me like he's trying to fulfill both of the rabbis we saw in the
Gemara. So according to the Torah, if you have in mind all the nisim Yetzias Mitzrayim plus the other opinion that you just said in regular sukkahs, but not on an ekava, you didn't do
it. That's an interesting question. If we paskin, that's a good question. If we pass, if according to the Shulchan Aruch, let's say we fully paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva is rejected, does that mean that if you have both in mind, you could somehow do damage? That's kind of what you're asking, right? Could that sort of undo the proper kavanah by having the improper kavanah? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. There is an idea that at least something from the Gemara that got rejected, you don't try to be machmir in something the Gemara rejected. But it's not so clear to me the Gemara rejected this opinion. Right? There's the Bikur Yaakov tries to show how two of the three Amoraim, one like Rabbi Lezer, not like Rabbi Akiva. But even that isn't like an explicit rejection of the Shita. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. But we'll see. The Chayyadim says, in fact, explicitly, even if the Mishnah Berurah doesn't mean that, and I think he doesn't, I think the Mishnah Berurah is trying to get you the Magen Avraham Taz in one shot. As you have in mind, it's just Mitzrayim, which the Pasuk talks about, and the Magen Avraham says, right? And then you also have Ananiya Kavod, which is shot in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Taz says, right, that's taking the Eliezer of Rabbi Akiva. I think all he's trying to do is get Magen Avraham Taz both in there. I don't think this has anything to do with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. But if you look in the Chayyadim, it certainly does. He says, Ksiv, it's written, B'sukos teshu zayin yamim, laman yidid orsechem, ki b'sukos hashavti es b'nei Yisrael v'gomer, meretz Yisrael. Mitchila ksiv b'sukos chaser, and I don't know where the Chayyadim gets this from. but I think it's interesting. He says, initially it's written Sukkos Chaser, meaning if you look, you'll see there's no Vav between the Kaf and the Taf. But Kan Besukkos Hashavti, Kasi Male. But here it says Besukkos with the Vav. Why? Elul Horos Shnei Minei Sukkos Sheyashvu. Right, that they dwelt in two different types of Sukkos. Echad Sukkos Sha'anane Kavod, Echad Sukkos Mamish. Shashnaru Al Ayaros Bemochamo Sichanog. Right, so Chai Adam manages to push both Shitas in there. Now, he doesn't actually tell you you're supposed to have any Kavana for this. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, if you look through all Chai Adam, you don't get any hint that you're supposed to be Mechavein. The Schach represents the Anane Kavod. The Schach represents Sukkos Mamish. I don't think you get that sense. But he certainly sets out at the very beginning both ideas. And not only that, I think, if you read the Chai Adam, do you even know there's a Mechlokas Tanayim? There's like no sense there's a Mechlokas Tanayim whatsoever. So I think that's interesting. I don't think it would make the Bikur Yaakov happier, maybe, to see that, right, that maybe some of the later poskim, in fact, do Paskin like Rabbi Akiva, and Paskin like both. And to strengthen a little bit, if you look at Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, here's my bag. So what I think is fascinating is the Kitzur's reputation. I mean, it's called Kitzur, right? So the Kitzur doesn't usually... Kitzur's trying to give you an abbreviated... He's trying to put the halacha in your hands. He's going to give you, like, an abbreviated halacha. He's going to let you know what the dinim are, but he's not usually going to get into a whole pilpul about Makoros and Shas. So what's fascinating is, as far as I can tell, the Kitzur is the only one who lays out the Mechlokas tonight. So the Kitzur says, "Yuksiv l'man yidid urseichem ki besukah sushabti es b'nei Yisrael behotzi osam meretz Mitzrayim v'lechein tzrichim l'chavim b'shivas sukah." So what do you have to have in mind when you're in the sukah? Shetzivanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu leishiv besukah zeich leitzias Mitzrayim. You have to have in mind that Hashem told us to be in the sukah to remember leaving Egypt. Besukos elu sh'omer HaKasev, what are the sukahs? Besukos Hashavti Nechalku Bahem Tanayim. It's a Mechlokas Tanayim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hema Anane Akavod Sheikif Bahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es Avoseinu Laval Yikem Shurav Hashemesh. Rabbi Kiva Omer Sukos Mamish Shasu Lahem B'Shas Chaniyasami Me'achama. So the Kitzur lays out the Mechlokas Tanayim. Rabbi Eliezer says it's Anane Akavod. Rabbi Kiva says it's Sukos Mamish that they made for themselves. Right? The Kitzur, as far as I haven't done all the chippus, but he's the one who lays out the Mechlokas Tanayim most clearly, strangely. I'll also say, just because I think it's interesting, apparently the Chai Adam was one of the three principal Makoros. Whenever the Kitzur would paskin, the Chai Adam, he always had Chai Adam in front of him along with two others for him. So it could be he's going in the footsteps, but unlike the Chai Adam, he spells out the Mechlokas Tanayim. Let's take a look at Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. This will be our last source here. Right, we have this Mechlokas. I guarantee if you look in the Mefarshim on the Chumash, you'll see Hashkafic distinctions being made. If you hold it's Sukkos Mamish, if you hold, right, it's an Anei Kavod. What I think Rav Hirsch does, which is nice, and maybe sits well with the Chai Adam, is the following. And this is a much longer piece, and it's in English. There's no reason not to look it up later. I'm only giving you a very small excerpt. Accordingly, it is to free us from putting too much weight and valuing too high in idolizing our skill and ingenuity and obtaining our quote bread unquote. The experience of the wilderness was given to us, and it is of the wilderness filled with God's loving providence and care that the happy, satisfied living under the roof of the wilderness that the sukkah is to tell and preach to our generations. So that whether hasukos to which our sukkahs are to refer were, as several opinions take them to be, the Anane Kavod, the clouds which intimated God's presence, the clouds under whose protecting cover God sheltered his people in the wilderness, other or whether they were Sukkos Mamish, actual huts which the people built for themselves. Then he's opened four ledges. So Rav Hirsch says here that regardless of which Ashita, my brass tacks, what should you have in mind? You're supposed to take home a Musar Haskel dealing with what it was like living in the wilderness, but the... I think I should say, by the conception wilderness is the absence of all the assistance to the means of living, which is normally afforded by nature and human art. Entering the wilderness, a man steps out from the protection and assistance of nature and work of man, and can only retain existence through God. That being in the sukkah should make us, give us a heightened sense of vulnerability, a heightened sense of our dependence on Hashem. And this is true whether we're referring to the supernatural sukkos or the sukkos mamish. According to the Chai Adam, could very well be you should have both in mind, but that the Musar Haskel you should walk away from the Chag with is that of a heightened sense of dependence on God. And so, in summation, when that woman had asked me what it is we're doing in the sukkah, I suppose probably the best answer, and I didn't have it at my fingertips to answer at the time, would have been, I'm trying to increase my sense of my dependency on God and not on myself and other people.